Now I'd like to introduce our first panelist, Mike Bond, who will talk to you about some different Medicaid reforms that are going on around the country.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll get my jokes out of the way first. I'm a Detroit Tigers fan, and your Yankees are going down, folks. Okay. It's been a long dry spell. You might ask why a gentleman from Cleveland, Ohio, is a Tigers fan. The reason, of course, is that Cleveland doesn't have professional sports teams, although there's been talk about that taking place. Last bad joke. I was at a Super Bowl party last January, and I'm a Green Bay Packers fan as well. They brought out all the old MVPs. My hero, Bart Starr, was there because it was the 40th anniversary of the Super Bowl. And then I realized it was also the 40th anniversary of Medicaid, and I got excited because I figured I'd get invited to all sorts of Medicaid anniversary parties. And so far, that hasn't happened yet. And, of course, the reason is Medicaid, to put it bluntly, faces some very serious challenges in the United States. The first challenge that everybody knows about is Medicaid's fiscal challenge. It has trillions in unfunded liabilities. The system nationally accounted for about 2% of the economy in the year 2000. This isn't up there, by the way. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has estimated it'll rise to 9% by 2075. Combined with Medicare and Social Security, the size of the federal government will double. And we aren't quite sure how we'll get the money to afford that. So we certainly have a fiscal problem. When I talk around the country on this and debate some who want to keep the current system, I also emphasize that Medicaid has a very serious quality problem. I'm convinced, for example, that nobody in this country gets worse health care than people in fee-for-service Medicaid. Medicaid has waiting lists and outright shortages related to its plan design. We have had the development of Medicaid mills with low-quality care. We get lack of early treatments that lead to serious ailments. For example, young women who are pregnant who can't get OBGYN care wind up with low birth rate babies who suffer the rest of their life, not to mention costing the taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars. The current system produces very little innovation. It also has generated around the nation fraud and abuse. Fortunately, New York has no problems in terms of that, unlike Ohio and Florida. And then we also get some outright stupidity related to plan design. My personal favorite is the family with an autistic child who was afraid to take a bath in still water. So the water needed to be moving, and then he would take a bath. $1.99 wind-up rubber deck would have taken care of the problem. Medicaid bought them a $5,000 whirlpool to deal with it. So some of these things do take place. When I would talk initially in Ohio and then around the country, I would always get pushback that Medicaid is a low-cost provider of health care. I think that's a fallacy. Medicaid's low inflation rate is related to price controls. In Ohio, for example, when we were a little short of money in 2004, we simply cut reimbursements to hospitals and doctors, presuming that there were no implications to that, which, of course, there are. One of them is low quality, which we've already talked about, and the other is cost shifting. Part of the inflation you get in the private sector is simply cost shifting from stingy Medicaid reimbursements. Nationwide Medicaid reimbursements are 38% below Medicare reimbursements for the same type of services. Now, how do we get into a system here that is very low quality and has trillions in unfunded liabilities? In my opinion, it's because there's no real marketplace in Medicaid, and for that matter, in much of Medicare, and for that matter, in much of private health insurance. And if we're going to solve this problem, in my view, we have to create a real marketplace. In a real marketplace, buyers enter the marketplace and act in their own interests, spending their money or money that has been provided for them, and sellers competing with each other produce goods and services and innovate, trying to earn profits and income. Medicaid is a price control system, as is Medicare. You have cost-based reimbursements for some types of these services. Well, I'm sorry, folks, but when you pay people to have costs, you get lots of costs. We have documented, for example, in Ohio, that there are nursing homes where the owners of the nursing homes also run catering businesses out of the nursing home, food facilities there. It's amazing how much shrimp the elderly eat in the state of Ohio in those nursing homes. And it's also amazing some of the catering businesses that have 100% gross margins, because we figured out that the taxpayers are actually paying for that food. You also have prospective payment schemes, you know, from Medicare, and you get some of these in Medicaid, DRGs, RBRBS schedules, and so forth. They're just price controls. Governments can do lots of things. They can collect taxes, they can provide subsidies, they can set the rules of the game, they can promote competition, but they cannot set prices. And that's what they do in healthcare, and the result is enormous inefficiency. And when you get enormous inefficiency, it means you need a lot more resources in to produce the services that you want to get out. I think that brings us to the ultimate solution to the problem that we face. It has to do with what we call productivity, which again is output divided by inputs. Productivity has grown over time, and that's the source of rising living standards. It's really the most important of all economic statistics. And if you could get big productivity gains in Medicaid, Medicare, and in private health care, you would slow down, bend down the inflation rate in these plans, and they would become more sustainable over time. The Brookings Institution, which is a moderately liberal think tank in Washington, has just released a major study on productivity. It's not really that hard to measure it, for example, in the automobile industry, when you see the number of cars coming out and the inputs that go in there, but it's a little trickier in services, which are harder to categorize there, and they've done that. From 1987 to 2001, they estimated private non-farm productivity grew at 2% a year, 2% more per input. Manufacturing grew at 3.1%. And as Dr. Greenspan, when he was chairman of the Fed, figured out in the mid-90s, it accelerated in services as well. Service growth was 1.8%. Brookings also estimated it for healthcare. That would be 0% in that sector there. Now, there are admittedly studies that show higher productivity rates by assuming quality changes in the price inflation and so forth. But I've talked to the economists at Brookings, and they pretty much stand by those numbers there. There's another sector that also has no productivity gain over that period, and that would be education, my industry, which after we fix healthcare, we have to fix mine. I think the problem here is both areas suffer from the lack of a real free market with resulting cost and quality issues. If we're going to fix this, I think we should follow the following game plan. First of all, every state Medicaid plan should create what's called an insurance and provider exchange. It's just a mart where Medicaid beneficiaries go to buy their health care from providers who are competing to deliver those services. Now, of course, in Medicaid, these people are poor, at least in some instances. For example, when I was working in Texas, we discovered there were people making $80,000 a year who were enrolling their spouses and children in the SCHIP program because nobody ever bothered to ask or check into that. But presumably, most of these people are poor. They are going to receive credits to purchase their health care, and the providers are going to compete to deliver that. All of these plans, in my view, should be prepaid. It is very difficult to control unnecessary and excess utilization in healthcare with fee-for-service plans without significant cost sharing. I was at a little event last summer. We had Dr. Milton Friedman in, which was kind of exciting for me. He estimated that if you went back to the 60s, before we really expanded the government sector of healthcare, the stop-loss policies that people were buying adjusted for inflation and income would be like having a $15,000 deductible on your health plan now. So much of healthcare was simply a cash business before we made those changes in the 60s. Well, you can't do that in Medicaid because these people are poor. It's very difficult to get significant cost sharing to control utilization, so it's probably better to have some type of prepaid adjustment. The other thing that needs to be done is the payments have to be risk adjusted. This was a major issue when we created these government plans 40 years ago. Nowadays, I mean, look at your kids' video games, how sophisticated those are. There's easy-to-use software that when you put the characteristics in health-wise for populations, it produces risk-adjusted valuations on that. Medicare, for example, is now doing it with Medicare Advantage. So that technical part of this is not that big of a deal anymore. It's not that hard to risk-adjust payments, and that reduces the concern with adverse selection. We also need to allow plans to offer different benefits because the needs of this population are so diverse. In addition, I don't think people on Medicaid should have worse health coverage than I do. I don't think they should have better health coverage. Once I run up $2 million in bills on my plan, the carrier is under no obligation to pay anymore. And I think you need to have an overall dollar benefit limitation in Medicaid like you do in private plans. I found instances in South Carolina where there were individuals in the fee-for-service plan who had 3, 4, maybe 5 life-threatening illnesses. They were about as sick as you could be, and then they performed transplants on them, and they all passed away within a matter of weeks anyway because it was fee-for-service and there was no limitation on the amount of spending. It made no sense. It cost the taxpayers a fortune, and their final days were much more miserable than they were going to be anyway. It's possible to allow people to take these credits to buy into employer-based plans. And finally, a very important thing that needs to be done is you get into issues in rural areas, and we had this in Ohio. It's difficult to get these prepay plans operating in rural areas because you don't have the critical mass that you need there. So what you're going to have to do is have Medicaid stand behind smaller plans with essentially reinsurance. One of the Democratic legislatures in Kansas was on my case about that, and I said, well, you know where I got that idea from? And he said, where? I said, I got it from Senator John Kerry, who advocated reinsuring some type of health costs in 2004. Okay. My conservative brethren here love health savings accounts. I think a private sector type HSA is problematical in Medicaid. But if you flip those over and make them as an arrangement for paying for healthy types of behavior, then those can be useful in Medicaid. For example, nationwide, over 20% of the country's health bill, estimated by my friend Ken Thorpe down at Emory, who worked for Bill Clinton, over 20% of the nation's health bill is related to obesity. And that is disproportionate in Medicaid. Well, you know, people can go on a diet. And one of the ways we might be able to get them to go on a diet is to use these reverse health savings accounts to pay for healthy behavior. Let's get them living healthy lifestyles before they become very sick and start running up very, very large bills. Okay, what are some states doing? Up here I have some stuff that Kentucky sent me. Let me go through here. We don't need to read the ads. Okay, Kentucky Health Choices. This was a combination of 1115 and 1915 waivers along with the Deficit Reduction Act. Basically, they're broadly saying they're going to try some cost sharing and alternative premiums. I think you have to be careful about cost sharing in Medicaid. New rules for prescription drug coverage. I like the third one there a lot. Co-pays for emergency room visits for non-emergency care. People ought to have the book thrown at them for misusing hospital room, emergency rooms like that. Very important, tailored health benefit packages, given the diverse problems that Medicaid beneficiaries have. Increases in the use of home and community services rather than institutional long-term care and services. Service limitations, something along the lines there of limiting the overall benefit packages. Incorporate best practices from the commercial market. Limit on maximum out-of-pocket expenses, and of course that can't be real high for Medicaid. Tiered formularies, some of the things that you see in the private market. And consumer involvement in prevention and care management. Now, one thing I noticed when I got this was it's kind of broad. It's a kind of a we're opposed to sin thing, and then I didn't get a whole lot of the specifics, so I suspect they're still working on a lot of the design issues here. There. These are the plans that they have come up with in Kentucky. Global Choices, which will cover the general Medicaid population program, including foster children and medically fragile children. So this is like your acute care deal. Family Choices, which is basically SCHIP. Optimum Choices, which covers the mentally retarded and developmentally disabled. And Comprehensive Choices, which covers individuals who are elderly and in need of nursing facility level care. So they're breaking down this into these diverse groups there to try to meet their needs, or so they say. Okay. There we go. Sorry. Member involvement. Members will be encouraged to participate in prevention and disease management programs. Okay, that sounds good. Cost sharing. which if used right can reduce some unneeded services, and if used wrong, I think it can cause some problems there. And then service limitations, which they discussed earlier. Here they talk, for example, about limiting prescriptions to 4 per month. Some of the financials here with regard to the general Medicaid population, the acute care, they list the amount of out-of-pocket maximums, the copays that they're going to charge, and so forth. Again, if these are set up properly, they can be useful. Remember, in Medicaid, you get this skewed dollar expenditure like you do in general health care. So I'm not sure how many of these reforms here are going to get at some of the really big bills that are driving some of the problems that you have in this program. Second of all, with regard to this, they haven't really told me the framework that they're going to do this in. I mean, are they going to offer these 4 different types of programs for different people through fee-for-service? Is it going to be prepaid? Are there going to be risk adjustments? Presumably there's going to be some because they've broken them down into 4 different populations. So I think we're going to have to come back to Kentucky and see how they do the nuts and bolts on this. On paper, it's very broad. If it's not done right, I don't know that it's going to be real helpful, if the truth be told there in terms of this. Ohio, where I'm from, we wrote a report in 2003 on Medicaid reform. I got a grant for that. I thought, oh, this will be easy. I'll just look up the literature on Medicaid reform. I'll be done in a week. And then I figured out there wasn't any literature on Medicaid reform. We wrote this. All of a sudden, I started getting calls around the country asking me about Medicaid. I said, where'd you get my name? They said, well, you're the expert on it. I said, I'm not an expert on anything. And they said, well, you're the only one that's written on this. So, you know, that's where we were at that point. I actually had to work for that money. Don't expect that in a university. Okay. In Ohio, based on that, the legislature has mandated that all acute care beneficiaries go into managed care plans. The only problem is we did that 13 years ago, and it flopped. Okay? In the rural areas, some of these plans were just networks. And by law, you have to have 2 choices. So you'd have 2 network choices, and you had the same doctors and hospitals in both of them. That doesn't really give you effective competition, folks. Then they got them in there, and there was no risk adjustment, so these guys were trying to cherry-pick out the healthier beneficiaries, which is what you're going to get without risk adjustment. Then after they got everybody in, the state was short on money, so they cut their reimbursements by 10%. Some of the plans went broke, and the other one said, we don't want to be involved in this anymore. So Ohio's back to managed care here. If they do it the same way that they did 13 years ago, it's going to flop just as bad as it did last time. If they do some of the things that we've suggested here, I think it can be successful. In terms of nursing homes, they are getting rid of the cost-based reimbursement, and they are replacing those with a prospective payment. That's what Medicare did when they shifted over to DRGs. The problem is, what's the right payment? I'm not real sure there that the government has the ability to properly set that, so I suspect down the road that will be used as a budgeting tool, and they'll just keep paying the nursing homes less and less and less. So we've done a little bit in Ohio here, but I'm not sure how well that's going to work. South Carolina, when I've been inviting Governor Sanford on this, he's up for re-election, so that will start up again in November. Okay? Take time out to run for re-election. The initial proposal that they sent on acute care was to give everybody a health account. You could take the money in that health account, and you could buy from competing plans, which I like, and they were going to adjust the size of that health account. Then they got into some issues with just combining that health account with fee-for-service, and what would happen in some instances was there was going to be significant out-of-pocket exposure, and while the man is great, Dr. McClellan pushed right back on that. He was not going to allow a Medicaid reform with significant out-of-pocket risk for acute care beneficiaries. So I suspect that part of it will be toned down, and it'll look more like the account where you buy from competing prepaid and network plans there with risk-adjusted benefits. They haven't sent this in yet, but on nursing homes, they are advocating that within certain areas, they will say, well, we need 400 beds in this particular region in the state, and then what will happen is the nursing homes will no longer be cost reimbursed. They will simply bid by bed day. So, for example, one of the nursing homes may offer 40 beds at $69 a day. They'll take those. Another may offer 60 beds at $75 a day. They will go through the bidding process until they reach the number of beds they need, and then the process will end. They'll do that about every 3 years. In the meantime, the rate that they agreed to in that bidding will be adjusted based on a quality index. So the nursing homes will no longer be paid by cost reimbursement. They will be paid for providing quality care, which presumably is what we want in terms of that. That request has not gone into Washington yet. Representative over here is going to speak on what I think is the boldest and best Medicaid reform plan, because it goes along with a lot of the things I suggested here. But that's sort of where we stand nationally. We no longer have the excuse that Washington will not approve broad-based waivers. As we'll hear in Florida, it was sent in on October 2nd, 1985, and CMS signed off on October 19th, 1985. That has got to be a record for getting something done in Washington, D.C., a 17-day period there. So the mindset is there to make big changes in this program. If we don't do it, I think we are just going to wind up with a government-run rationing program. You know, there's no mystery to how they do it in Canada. They establish a global budget, and you know, then they ration health care, and they're not going to get the innovation and type of things you need to continually produce quality changes there. So that's sort of my spiel there. Thank you for having me in.